there's no timeline to grief. It's going to come 11 years later, you know, or 60 years later. That grief is all the love that they wanted to give their child. So I encourage our families to just forget how society says you need to grieve. Figure out how you need to grieve best for yourself.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Straight Talk on Life Issues That's Sure to Touch Your Heart. I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves.
You know, Victor, when faced with the potential death of a newborn or stillborn birth, parents often feel unprepared for the emotions that they're going to be drowning in at times. And this is very challenging for them to walk through that process.
It's heartbreaking to have to face the unforeseen. All the hopes and the dreams that the parents had for their baby can be gone in a heartbeat.
Yes, but this is where perinatal hospice comes in. Perinatal care helps families deal with those heartbreaking situations. Hospice nurses and social workers help families prepare for loss, coaching the parents on what to say to siblings and coworkers and others, an issue that I hadn't even thought of.
Yeah. And there's a need for parents' physical and emotional care throughout a pregnancy that's been deemed incompatible with life.
And perinatal hospice is a compassionate, life-affirming option for parents.
We'll talk more with our guest today as we discuss this. Joining us, we have Stephanie Grimm and Kathy Pittman, executive directors from the Haven Network. And we also have Erin Ballard. She lives in Northern Illinois with her husband, Jason, and her two sons. She's also the mother of six babies gone too soon.
Stephanie, Kathy, and Erin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This is a topic that not many people are aware of. So, Stephanie and Kathy, tell us, what is perinatal hospice?
Perinatal hospice, as The Haven does it, is supporting families in the immediate and long-term grief after their baby passes away. So we start in the hospital after a baby is born, providing as much support and care and resources as we can, and then follow that up with long-term grief support for as long as the family needs.
So let's talk a little bit about what The Haven actually does. Can you give me some detail? Kathy, we'll start with you.
The Haven meets with the families. If we meet with them beforehand, we let them know that they have options, that they can carry their baby, that they can love their baby, they can deliver their baby. It does not have to end tragically with an abortion, per se, but we just encourage families to go through the normal birthing process. And we are there to provide comfort and support and offer them opportunities to make memories with their baby.
And in particular, you bring a gift to the table that's a very important part of the service that you provide. Could you tell us a little bit about the photography aspect?
Sure. Near and dear to my heart, I love the opportunity to offer families pictures, all the details of their babies, their little noses, their little ears, their toes, and just give them all the pictures and things that they would get had they had a live birth. Well, in some cases they do, but we just want to treat this as precious of a time as possible and acknowledge the life of that baby.
Stephanie, can you add to what she's already told us about The Haven?
Absolutely. So in regards to caring for our families, we have two groups, so to speak. So we start with our hospice families, which are the families that will find out at 20 weeks that there may be a diagnosis that's incompatible with life. At that point, like Kathy said, the family is then referred from the hospital to us. So at the hospital, they have all the medical support that they need. What we provide is the emotional support through it. So they're inundated with questions on what they want to do, how they want to handle this. The abortion question is brought into that, but we're the place that families come to for when they want to carry their baby to term. And then we have our families, the ones they're emergent. So they go to the doctors, they have an issue that brings them to the hospital, and they find out and hear the words that no one wants to hear is that, I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat. So those are the ones that are more of an unfortunate surprise. And that's where we step in with those families too. You know, they have the medical support they need. We bring the emotional support, the keepsakes, the memories, the counseling, the, you know, all the grief support that they need so that they're not alone in all of this.
I would think that one of the things that parents need is some coaching on how to interact with family, friends.
Most definitely.
Church members. Give us a little insight as to what you provide there.
Everyone's grief journey is kind of like a snowflake. They're all different. What worked for me is not going to work for someone else. And what worked for that person isn't going to work for someone else. But at the baseline, I really encourage all of our families to grieve how they need to, that there's no timeline to grief. It's going to come 11 years later, you know, or 20 years, 60 years later. That grief is all the love that they wanted to give their child. So I encourage our families to just forget how society says you need to grieve. Figure out how you need to grieve best for yourself. And just, I can't think of the right word to say it, but kind of just extend grace to those who are uncomfortable with dealing with death. You know, people are going to say some horrible things. That's pretty much it, is just grieve how you need to grieve when you need to do it. And just understand that it's not a checklist of, okay, first I feel anger, then I have to accept it. And you go through those five steps and it's done. It's all a big hot mess in the middle. We do our best.
Grieving is a hot mess.
It is.
It's an ugly process at times, but the Holy Spirit does some amazing things through grieving process, as I'm sure you've both witnessed. Is there a spiritual element to what you provide to parents?
Well, we serve everyone, so not everybody's going to be receptive to that.
Right.
But we have prayed with our families. We've recently started offering Bibles to our families, and we put the baby's footprint in the Bible. So that if they're not believers, they're less likely to throw it away if their baby's footprint is in it.
A little realism injected there, yes.
A little bit. We're going to serve absolutely everyone. And honestly, there's some families that you can just tell they don't care whether you're there or not. Not everybody grieves in the same way, at least in our eyes that you can see. But we always say that we are there to honor the life of that little baby. We are so fortunate that we have a volunteer who makes crosses, and every family gets a cross. They're wooden. They're absolutely beautiful. And if the baby is small enough, we'll put their feet on the backside of the cross.
Oh, nice.
And everything that we do, we provide families with a memory box. And so everything that we provide, we try to make it so that it can fit inside there, because we know that some of our families, you know, just put the memory box on a shelf and it's too painful to look at for a while. So we just try and compact everything in there. But of course, we're praying for our families, our volunteers, our Christians. It's a good family of people serving our families.
What motivated you both to get into perinatal hospice? Kathy, let's start with you.
When I was in high school, I was on a gathering of Baptist church youth groups, and we met and we went to Estes Park, Colorado. And one of the girls in our group was 5 months pregnant. On the way back, we stopped at a restaurant. She went to the bathroom and baby's foot came out. Mm. And we just weren't, I mean, just completely, completely sidelined by that. And as somebody in high school at such an emotional time anyway, I couldn't come to grasp with that at all. We had a funeral and there was a casket. I never saw the baby. I didn't get it. I didn't think there was anything in the casket. It tormented me for a long time, like for a year. I just couldn't get through it. Later on, I was gifted a camera from my husband first and then my dad, and I got equipment, and it was with the intent of starting my own business, which I did, but then I wanted to do something more with it. And I thought back to my friend from youth group, and she had nothing. You know, this was pre-cell phones. There were no pictures of this baby. And so I just wanted to do something for families that wouldn't have that opportunity. I had seen information about Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep, but there were no chapters in our area. And as far as I knew, I was the only person. So I just felt like that was too much to take on. We have 3 big hospitals in our area, so I didn't want to take that on myself. And I went to a local nonprofit that was helping entrepreneurs, and I was there and I was telling them that I wanted to pursue something along those lines. She hooked me up with the woman who started The Haven. And it was totally a God thing. And I started out as a volunteer and I just worked my way in. I just kept shoving my place, kept moving farther and farther until they had no choice but to hire me. And I started the photography program here.
Let's hear from you, Stephanie. What motivated you to get involved with perinatal hospice?
It's my son, Dylan, and he died at birth 11 years ago. We went to the hospital thinking that he was going to be born, and during birth, he passed away with no real explanation. So at the hospital, we had nurses and doctors just not sure what to do. You know, clearly the nurses that I worked with had never had this experience before, so they didn't know what to do. They did their best. I got a footprint and a handprint, and the pictures of my son are on a digital camera with with the circumcision poster behind it, which is not something, it's not a really great picture to have of your son. And so I lived with that for a while. And then I ran my mouth on social media, on my Facebook page, just writing about how there's nothing and there's no, you know, he was born. I left the hospital the day after and it was pretty much good luck. And it just, it killed me that there was nothing, you know, I had to figure this all out on my own. And, you know, in the back of my head, I wish that there was something I could do about it, but not knowing what, I just kept living. And like I said, I ran my mouth on social media about something, just journaling my loss and how, you know, none of my friends knew what to do. No one knew how to handle grief. And someone read it who was connected with the Haven. And like Kathy did, I started volunteering and we both kind of worked our way up. And now I'm part of the Haven and it's healing because I'm making sure that other families who had a loss like I have aren't just sent out the door with good luck. That there's, like we've talked about, there's beautiful keepsakes made for the family. There's people there to in the hospital immediately help you sort stuff out and who are there with you for the long haul. So making sure that other people have what I didn't and what I wanted is why I'm here.
Yeah. You both are examples of God using the ashes in your lives to do something very spectacular for his kingdom and for your fellow man.
Stephanie, I'm curious, how do people typically find out about perinatal hospice?
The hard way. They find out when we have all the hospitals in town, all the nurses and medical providers advocate for us. So when the situation comes across that there's a family who could benefit from our services, the doctors and nurses advocate for us.
Well, let's turn our attention toward Aaron, who has so patiently and quietly taken everything in. Now is your time to shine, Aaron. Briefly tell us your story.
So my husband and I have two biological boys. We had a few failed adoption attempts and at one point came across embryo adoption. And so we looked into that, pursued that, and we matched with a family. So it was a private, not a clinic adoption. They gave us two of their embryos. So we transferred them and one of them was doing amazing. I had a lot of monitoring, which I'm really thankful now because I have a lot of pictures, but she was perfect. There was no sign of anything wrong. And we found out on a Friday, the genetic test came back that she was a girl. And on Monday, I went in for just a regular checkup and she was all curled up. The doctor didn't have to say anything. We just both looked at each other and I mean, he had tears in his eyes. I was in shock. So I didn't hear those four words, there was no heartbeat. He didn't have to say them. And then my doctor gave me my options. And he told me at this gestation, you could do a D&E, but you shouldn't. He was very straightforward and told me, you don't want to do that. You want to go to the hospital and you want to deliver this baby. The nurse that day gave me the miscarriage packet from the Haven and told me that I needed to call them right away and they were gonna help me. I waited a day because I had to process what was happening, but then I did call and Stephanie got in touch with me and has been with me ever since. Yeah, so she really walked us through that. In the midst of all this, not having a clue what I'm doing, what I wanted to do with Evelyn's remains, and she helped us kind of walk through the steps of what we could legally do and what we couldn't and who we needed to contact. And then it was Stephanie and Kathy who were at the hospital with us too. So I have Kathy's beautiful pictures and then we have a photo album on our mantle that my boys can look through and see their sister because this was still during COVID protocols and stuff. So my boys were not allowed at the hospital. They didn't let them come see their sister, which for my youngest, he's really struggled with. So I'm thankful for those pictures.
precious, precious memories for the whole family.
Yes. And then after Evelyn, the family we got our first set of embryos from had four more, and they gave them to us as well so we could try again. We lost two more twins really early, and then we transferred the last two, and one of them stuck with us for 8 weeks. So we had Bethany too, and she was only 8 weeks, so she was born at home. But after being walking through everything with Stephanie for so long, I was more prepared that time. And the Haven had also gotten me in counseling right away, and I was still working with the grief counselor for quite a while. I know Stephanie said they stay with a family as long as you need, and it's been 2.5 years that I still send text messages going, is this normal, or should I feel this way, or what should I do here? And always get a response, always get encouragement.
Yeah, that loving foundation underneath you has got to be very comforting and helpful. Erin, your story underscores the importance of perinatal hospice, in particular the Haven, to not only you, the parents, but also to your children. The whole family obviously has benefited an enormous amount through this process.
Yeah, the Haven hosts a Walk to Remember every October, and we get shirts. They have the girls' names on the back of them. My youngest starts asking probably midway through October when the next one is. He's already making preparations for the next one as soon as it ends.
Yes, you have an extended family now.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about your feelings at the point of your pregnancy and situation when you were introduced to the Haven.
I think like my brain, my body, everything went into shock. They're asking you all these questions. You can't take the baby home with you. What are you going to do? What funeral home are you going to use? Are you going to bury the baby or have her cremated? What are you going to do? I had no idea. My husband had no idea. So it was a lot of asking Stephanie questions.
It just underscores how critical their support is for you and your husband and family.
Erin, what are some of the ways that you and your husband benefited from going through the program with the Haven Network?
Yeah, knowing that someone was always there, maybe didn't always have the answers, but had the answers more than we did. Someone who could say what I'm feeling or what I'm thinking is a normal mom response. So those days where my husband was going, yeah, but we just need to get up. We need to get back to life. But the Haven is saying, but this is going to take time. So that was helpful, just having someone who had been there, someone who knew this is normal. These are normal responses. A big part was just having all of those keepsakes, having something tangible when we walked away to hold on to look at together. And then the extra things like the Walk to Remember, like the gathering in December, where we can see other families.
How has your healing journeys been?
It's been long. Especially when it gets compounded, because you think you're having your rainbow baby and then you lose your rainbow baby twice. I feel like the things I've read and everything, it's like, oh, the first year is the hardest. But then I'm going, okay, but we have multiple first years to get through now. So it's not just 1 year and then things start settling. But then there's another first year, because then there's Bethany's first year. So it's been long.
Erin, what's something that you want others to know about perinatal hospice?
If it's available where you're at, take advantage of everything they have to offer. Even if it doesn't make sense at the time, there's a reason that they offer it, but you'll probably find out later.
Stephanie, have you been taken to the woodshed by physicians when you persuaded, or by the services that you offer when they choose life instead of abortion?
Not so much as being spoken to, but you get the looks of like, we're making their job harder for them. I mean, we're not forcing one way or another. We just need, everyone deserves to know all the facts in whatever right. situation you're in.
Do you have parents who chose abortion and then regretted it and come back to you to help them deal with it?
I can think of one situation where we had a mom whose son had a life-limiting diagnosis, of course, and she was determined, like abortion is what she was going to do. Like, I sat down with her, we had a meeting. I went into it knowing what she wanted, but she was here. She was 100% abortion, but she chose to walk in our doors anyway. And that was like God saying, here you go. Like she, like that door was not closed in her mind completely. She might've been 99% sure that abortion is what she wanted to do, but not 100. So I took that 1% door opening that I could and explained to her why the Haven was here. Like, this is why we are here. This is your other option. And I just laid it all out for her. I told her, you know, whatever she chooses, we've got you. But here is what the Haven can do up until your child is born and then afterwards. And it was just one conversation and we never heard from her again until her son was born. And she invited us.
Oh.
She called us to the hospital. And I remember her just looking at, she just looked at me and I looked at her. And you know, you don't have to speak sometimes. Like you can just
indeed
see it in their eyes and their face. And I remember, I was just like, it sounds weird given the situation, but I had so much joy in my heart knowing that her son was born. Like he was not alive, but he was born. She allowed him his natural life. And just to see her hold him and have all of her pictures done and her keepsakes and her time with her son, with his whole family there, like just, she knew that this happened for a reason. And that I remember her, when she came to pick up her pictures, she didn't have to say much. She's like, I'm glad that I got to see him born. I'm like, yes. You know, you can't just, when you're having a professional conversation with someone, you can't just jump up and do a happy dance. But I did after she left. But just to see that, you know, God put her there 99% sure she wanted to proceed with an abortion. He walked her in the door and we had the conversation. And then I thought, okay, I'm sorry, God, I lost that one. But a couple months later, there she was holding her son. And it was just, it was a sadly beautiful moment.
Yeah, I just think that so many of them who opt for abortion grieve the death of their baby and then grieve the fact that the baby died really at their, not so much at their hands, but with right. their permission and participation. That's got to be a double whammy as far as emotional hot mess to deal with. Well, thank you. This has been quite the conversation. Stephanie, Kathy, and Aaron, thank you so much for sharing your hearts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, Victor, I found this conversation with these women both heartbreaking and encouraging, though, at the same time, optimistic in that they are providing such valuable services to parents and their whole families. We saw from Aaron's situation, the siblings really benefited to process that grief and experience death in a godly way. And that spiritual element is an absolute necessity to at least be offered to parents.
Yeah, to hear their stories, like you said, it's heartbreaking in one way, but it's also very encouraging to see the way that they've taken their stories and they're using them to help other people. And I'm imagining that there are many out there like myself who didn't know much about this topic before, but thankfully through their work with the Haven Network, they're bringing this to light so that so many people who are going through such an unfortunate circumstance can have a loving, supportive network around them.
Yes. And one thing I'd like to add is I find no sympathy for the physician who would encourage, coerce, or pressure parents to opt for abortion as the, quote, merciful gift, end quote, when in reality, he or she, as an abortionist, is violently and brutally killing their children. And then they're left to grieve not only the death, but the abortion itself.
That's right. And I want to encourage you, our listener, to visit our website, lifeissues.org. There you'll find resources and information that have been put together for you so that you can educate yourself as well as your friends, your families, and anyone that you may know who is in need of these resources. You'll find information on perinatal hospice. You'll find firsthand accounts of people who have been through there. They've done this and they've had that support network around them. To hear their stories is so powerful. So I encourage you once again to go to lifeissues.org and share those resources with anyone in your life that may need them. And be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.